looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the South community should be aware of.
The Global South Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsouthfoundation.org/Marines.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. My boy Tracy Lawrence joins me. Joining me from Texas, where the weather's have temperatures have returned to somewhat normal, 47 degrees as of about an hour ago. Michael Musselman joins us. First of all, update us on the weather and update us on your health. So what's going on? Are you getting sicker?
No, I feel great today.
Oh, you sound normal. You know, but Mike, this has been going around the country that it starts as influenza and I guess migrates to pneumonia. What's going on?
It's the North Koreans or the Chinese.
The Chinese wrote an editorial today in their big paper saying that our aggression in the South China Sea by conducting a freedom of navigation exercise is now going to precipitate their taking more measures to secure what is rightfully theirs. Nice. The Chinese, exactly. Okay, so what about the weather? Is the weather back to normal? You guys aren't down in the teens anymore?
No. Hey, Siri.
What?
What's the temperature outside? I'm so lazy.
Oh, my God. I just did that for the first time over the weekend.
Talk to Siri?
Not Siri. Google. I did ask Google. So you say, hey, Google.
Ask Google or is it okay? No, it's
okay Google.
Okay, Google.
Yeah, okay, Google. Yeah. So I did that. And it worked. I was like, whoa, check it out. Oh, Mac, coming into the 21st century. Nice. So talk to me about, so weather back to normal in Texas. So it's all good in Texas now?
Yeah. Hey, I just sent you on that, on Wicker.
On Wicker? Oh, that's you. For those of you who don't know, we have to encrypt our communication.
Right.
All right, so you got a new gun. Okay, wait, before we talk guns, I want to play some audio for you. Okay? Now, this is 50 years ago, starting this week, the siege at Khe Sanh began. This is some audio from, it would be probably 2 months from today, 50 years ago, Bravo Company 126, who was at Quezon. In fact, the picture, the famous picture of Quezon with the ammo dumps blowing up, they're right next to us. They had rotated to those positions like the day before. And there was CS in the ammunition dump. And they had packed away their gas masks that nobody had any idea where they were. So the NVA let it rip. And then the gas, their own gas, they hit the ammunition dump, hit the CS. Their own gas settles into the trench line that they're in because that's how gas behaves. It goes to low ground. And they're vomiting. They can't see. They tell this incredible story. Anyway, they send a patrol out maybe 2 weeks into this thing. 50-plus guys, only four of them came back. They called it the Ghost Patrol. Now, fast forward 2 months. They've lived, right? They now are going to send another company. The company Minus is going out to kill the guys, the NVA, that are still in that trench line that they bumped into that day, and also recover bodies. Okay, so this is, I'm going to play about 60 seconds, maybe 90 seconds of audio. This is these guys describing it, and one of them talks about somebody getting shot with a .45. Okay, so I wanted to play it for you. All right, so here you go. It, and again, it's called Bravo! Exclamation mark! Common Men, Uncommon Valor. It is awesome if you want to buy a good Marine documentary.
Ma'am, I hadn't seen them kill us yet.
On the way to secure the trench, an artillery or a mortar round landed between the platoon sergeant and myself, blew us both off our feet under our asses. I got hit in the head with shrapnel. He got hit in the leg. We were alive, so we got up and went on, got in the trench.
We had this one guy coming, charging at us. He couldn't have been, he was probably 100 feet, maybe a tiny bit farther away, but he was coming right at us for what reason, I don't know. He didn't even have a weapon. And one of the guys said, let me get him. And I'm just there. I'm a Roman Catholic, and I did not wish to take anyone's life. And so I was kind of hoping I could get through this experience without ever using my weapon. I was good with that. Anyway, so this guy took a .45, and he aimed, and he shot. He was right beside me. And that guy, at full bore running at us, folded like a cheap pocket knife, went back maybe a foot in the air, and fell to the ground.
First, I jumped into a trench.
How awesome is that? The stopping power of the .45 on display. How about Mike? How about that? I'm Catholic. I really didn't want to take anybody's life. I'm at Quezon. Before that, you hear as they were moving in like about at dawn, the command from the company commander came over to fix bayonets, and they all talk about, like, you know, the platoon commanders looked at their squad leaders and said, fix bayonets. And everybody looked like, what the fuck did he just say? And they're like, they look around and guys say, fix bayonets. And they were like, guys are getting their bayonets off their war belts. You know, some guys had it on their boot or something like that. And fixing bayonets. And they knew that they were going to. And they ultimately, because there was haze, they surprised the NVA. And get in a trench line. And they describe it, you swear to God, they're going through the trench line. It's awesome. But anyway, the stopping power of the .45. All right, let's talk about the stopping power of the Glock 19X that I'm looking at here.
It's nice, huh?
I mean, it looks like every other kind of Glock, except you got the tan version.
Well, that's what the requirement, the proposal asked for a non-reflective color, so they all came in like coyote brown.
Okay, all right, coyote brown. Okay, tell us about so this is differentiated between from the 19 to the 19X.
Yeah, it's got the 19 slide, the small slide, but it's got the larger frame, the 17 frame, so it holds more. And it's got the dual ambidextrous slide stops. So on both sides, and then it's got the dual ambidextrous magazine release. You can switch it out left or right, so it's a lefty pistol or a righty pistol.
Okay. So we've now made sufficient progress where we have mirror image controls on the pistol. Yes.
Yeah. the only thing is, so after reading a lot about the request for proposal right. on the modular handgun system that was levied by the government, the when you read between lines and then you look at some of the stuff, Glock beat the competition. The thing that made it null and void in the competition was it didn't have, was, again, the Army required some type of safety device, a lever, you know, and so the Glock refused to put that on there, because, you know, the Glock has three safeties. And it goes back to the way you teach. The number one safety that you have is your finger. So when you don't put your finger in the trigger, the gun's not going to go off. When you require a gun to have a mechanical safety, you kind of believe that guns will go off unattended, you know, unintentionally. So it has this stigma still that believes that it's easier to train people with a lever than it is to, you know, hey, don't put your finger on the trigger. But, you know, in essence, the Glock has three safeties that work, great. I mean, they're fantastic. As long as you don't put your finger on the trigger, the gun's not going to go off. It'll never go off.
So walk us through. The first safety is obviously don't put your,
the first safety is the trigger safety.
Alright, what is that?
In the Glock. If you look, notice on the Glock there's a little lever on the trigger.
Yes. At the base.
That blocks the trigger, it blocks the trigger from moving rearward. So, if you don't engage that middle little lever device, if you just, on a Glock, if you just try and push back on the outside of the trigger won't go.
Okay, so that would help. And inadvertently, something grabs it.
Right.
Doesn't so. So the only way
that's got to be a lot of pull.
Oh, it does.
I mean, that's 5 pounds of pull to actually do that here.
Okay, so for those of you trying to visualize this, imagine the trigger, and is it in the center of the trigger, Mike?
Yeah, it's in the center of the trigger. It's another little. It looks like a.
It's like, a little switch that sticks, that protrudes from that. You would have to depress that before you could pull the trigger.
Right.
Okay.
The second is what they call a firing pin safety. It's basically a channel. The firing pin is a striker, so it goes back and forth in a channel.
Okay, got it.
And for the firing pin safety to be deactivated is when the trigger starts to move rearward, it comes up and disengages and blocks and moves a pin out of the way for the channel to be, for the firing pin to go back and forth.
Oh, so you can only move that pin
pulling the trigger.
And that by pulling that the protruding piece on the trigger.
Right. And then once you stop pulling on the trigger, the firing pin safety re-engages and then blocks the firing pin from going forward.
Oh. And what did the Army want? What did the Army want in addition to that, Matt?
They wanted a lever, which normally, like on the Beretta, it's a decocking lever. That's what it's primarily doing, but everybody refers to it as a safety because it's got a little red dot.
Got it.
And when you disengage that, it rolls the firing pin into place. And then the last one is the drop safety in the rear part of the trigger bar. There's in the mechanism housing, there's a trigger bar that actually, even if you were to drop this gun when it's fully loaded and put it on place, and this plunger wouldn't allow for the firing pin to go, it locks the firing pin in place. It keeps it from going and engaging the fire pin.
Okay, now explain what the Army wanted. I mean, Glock's one of the most sought after weapons on the planet, incredibly successful commercial business. What did the Army want in addition to that?
They wanted an actual lever, a mechanical device that you would engage that would prevent the gun from firing. The problem with that stuff, when you start dealing with that, is, you know, It just, it adds to the fact that it's easier to train somebody in your eyes to actually think that, you know, they're going to keep that lever, in a safe position and the gun won't go off. So you're hedging your bets on something that, you know, you got to make sure that it's engaged or disengaged.
Why do you think Glock wouldn't do that?
Why would they? Why should they?
Well, no, I agree with you, but just from a business, if you and I are in product development and we see Glock's proposal,
because then it's sacrificing your values.
That's a
big, your gun is a safe gun.
That's a big contract, though. There's no bigger. I guess maybe the Chinese have a bigger pistol contract than we do, but that would be the only. Maybe the Indians do as well, but other than that. It's a pretty big. Would we not make an exception for the United States Army? I mean, it's a marquee contract. Interesting.
Yeah, I guess. But yeah, you don't want to sacrifice your values of you know what you believe in.
Interesting.
But yeah, overall, even the wife took it out and shot it, and now it's one of her favorite guns.
So you've already fired. When did you get it?
This weekend. I didn't go out to try and buy a gun. I was out there actually shooting on the range, and then
it just happened.
The guys that own the range are buddies of mine, and they have a gun store. They're like, "Hey, we just got two of the new Glock 19Xs," and I'm like, "Oh, you guys are so vicious." And then as soon as I put my hand on it, I'm like, "Oh," and then it's like, "Okay, give me the paperwork. I'm buying it."
No kidding. You did impulse purchase. Pistol buying?
Yeah.
Wow. That doesn't happen often to you.
Mm-mm.
But you're...
And it was funny because the wife was like...
But you're a Glock.
You know, like... Mm-hmm. The wife was like, "You bought another gun? We don't need another gun, man." Then we went and shot it. She's like, "Oh, I really like this."
So now when you've educated us about the ammunition that you use for women, did she shoot the same ammunition you did?
Mm-hmm.
She did.
Yeah, she shoots the same. Yeah.
And she liked it, even given the fact that there was no reduced load in it or anything like that?
Right.
Wow.
Well, because she's, you know, I teach her, she's been taught the right way to hold the gun. The only thing that she has a problem with every once in a while with the Glock is, and this is the problem with Glocks, the only problem with Glocks with people, inexperienced shooters have a tough time with Glocks because they limp wrist them. They're not putting enough forward pressure on the firing arm, the firing grip. And so when you limp wrist it, you're not putting enough pressure on it. When the gun recoils, it's recoiling too much, and then it's actually not cycling the gun.
Oh, that's not good.
No, see, it just takes some practice if you're inexperienced to actually shoot one of those guns, a Glock. And that's what a lot of people have problems with. They're like, "Oh, my Glock always jams." Well, because you're always limp wrist in it. "Oh, no, I'm not." Yes, you are. Let me show you. And I pick up a gun and I shoot a magazine out. They said, "Didn't do it to me." And then they pick it up and they shoot it and it jams first time. You know, and it's like, "Well, what do you mean?" Well, because you got to have a firm grip. You got to... It's not tolerant to people that don't know how to shoot. So you got to know how to shoot. You got to know how to handle the pistol. Once you get that down, then it's actually fairly easy.
I fell off my bike yesterday.
What bike?
I have a road bike. I bought a bike in, you'll laugh. I bought a bike in 1987. Before the Ranger went to, we had to surge to the Midway, back in the day. They had put these blisters on the hull of the Midway that was, home ported in Yokosuka, Japan. And, it was, and the Midway was a World War II carrier, and it had the straight deck on it. It didn't have an angle deck. And then what they did was later on to extend its life, they put an angle deck on it, and the Midway had this, like, what, Mike, a 7-degree list? You know, because it was imbalanced, it drove through the water with a permanent list. Well, then they decided to solve it by putting these blisters on the Midway, and it would drive right through the water. Well, and so they're out testing it, and the Navy had done all this. And what was happening was it would reach a point, and then it would kind of snap. And it crushed a couple of landing gear on planes that were landing when it kind of snapped very, very quickly. So they said, we can't send it out to sea. Ranger, you're going to go support Team Spirit. Like, what? That's like 3 weeks there, 3 weeks back. And then, oh, that's right. You're going to be gone for a while. Yeah, but we're deploying in June. And this was like, I don't know, late March. Oh yeah, we know that. You guys get your ass moving. So, I had been looking at bikes and so I bought a bike and I bought a stand for it, right? A resistance stand. And I asked the guys who I'd live with, two Navy guys, two P3 guys that were doing their at sea tour. I said, hey, do you mind if I throw this in our stateroom? And there's not that much room. And they said, no, we don't care. So I bought this bike. It was made by, is it Campagnolo? Old Italian company. And it's called the Torpedo, which was Italian for torpedo. So anyway.
Was it aluminum back then? Or is it still steel?
I think it's steel. It was steel. And my ex-wife Susan, she was not happy because it cost me about, in 1987, it cost me about $650. And she gave me a bunch of grief. I've been riding that bike for 30 plus years going on starting this year. So yesterday I'm out riding it and, there's some road construction. So I got to go up on the sidewalk and there's a cyclone fence. And as I'm trading my hands out on the bar, cause I had lifted weights earlier. My shoulders were getting tired. So I'm driving down the sidewalk and as I swap hands, I swerve a little bit and I hit the cyclone fence. I don't hit it completely. I kind of glance off it and I use my hand and then I go back to the right and then I have to come back to the left. I hit it a second time and I save it and I go to the right and then third time, there was no saving involved in it.
Wow.
Impact. So.
Man, last time I rode a steel bike, I was like 10.
let me tell you. I have the same cycling shoes I've had for 30 years. I still wear the same shoes. They're ripped and stuff like that, but they still function. So so then I go off.
Yeah, that thing's a Smithsonian.
A couple guys from MEF saw it in the back of my truck and they come in and they're like, Mac, is that your bike? And I said, yeah. And they're like, dude, that thing's worth money. Look it up on the internet. So I did. And it is. They're like, it's like a collector's item. Do you still ride it? And I said, yeah. I don't have another one. And they're like, oh man, that thing must be heavy. I'm like, well, I don't know what a new bike.
Yeah, sounds like it's super heavy.
What is it? But when you hit, when you're riding and you hit the asphalt, oh man, then you go skidding across. Yeah. But I've learned how to.
You got the old, you know, cable type shifters and everything, huh?
Right.
Yeah. See, that's weird. Mine are electronic shifting. There's no cables. It's all wireless.
What? Electronic?
Yeah. They're electronic.
I thought that they were. I thought they were still cable, but they were notched. You know what I mean? So you flip it, and then boom, it pops into the gear, as opposed to searching for it on.
No, mine's electronic. There's a battery that goes on the bike, and what it does is it trims the bike out, so you never get chain rub. So yeah. It's automatically trimming the bike at whatever gear you're in.
Yeah. What else on a bike like that?
Oh, I mean, every component on it is carbon fiber.
So it weighs nothing?
Weighs, you know, like 13 pounds.
What about anything different about the seat? Anything different about the handlebars?
Well, the handlebars are carbon fiber. The seat's a carbon fiber shaft. And then it's very narrow because you never really, you know, it's designed for, you know, I guess endurance and speed. So it's very streamlined. the handlebars are kind of like a plane's wing. So they're not rounded. They're kind of oval. So air goes over them.
Do you put aero bars or anything like that? Or do you just ride with the way they are?
No, they ride with the way they are. It's just the way the bike is. And then the seat, though, the frame is also, you know, it's not rounded. It's more oval, again, for wind resistance.
The seat is.
Yeah. Even my forks, you know, I'm trying to think, what on my bike, the chain is metal. My crank and the crankshaft, the shaft are carbon fiber. The spokes are carbon fiber. Can't think. The derailleur and everything, I guess, is metal. My brakes are actually carbon fiber.
And it's electronic.
Holy yeah, shit. It's the DI2.
Made by who?
Shimano.
Shimano DI2. What about the brakes? Are the brakes electronic?
No, the brakes are cable. I had to think about that. But yeah, they're cable.
Yeah, bike.
So if you look, Shimano DI2. And I think they're that's like old school now, DI2s.
I wonder why the brakes, there's a whole series of DI2 bikes. Ultegra, M19, 9050.
Yeah, I have the Ultegra DI2.
Wow, man. Bikes are crazy. You see people with crazy things on bikes. Gun question.
Yeah.
Mac, what is the biggest difference between the Glock 19 and the 19X?
The 19, the 17 has a longer slide, so it's a little bit bigger gun. But the frame of the 19X is the same length of the 17, but you get a Glock 19 slide with it, so it's a smaller slide.
Okay, so it's same weight, same frame, same everything.
It's a little bit lighter than the Glock 17 because it's not the slide isn't as long.
Okay,
but you get the same ammo capacity. Plus, you're with the Glock 19X. It comes with two magazines, 17 plus twos they call it, so it holds 19 rounds. And this is what they consider a Gen 5, a Generation 5, so it's got the adjustable back straps on the back, but it's got the ambidextrous slide locks, and then you can switch out the magazine release.
But the 19X is an ambidextrous pistol. Does that cost you anything?
It's an ambidextrous pistol.
Does that cost you anything?
The Glock 19X is a little bit more, it's a little bit more expensive than the, well, because of the coating and everything else, and it comes with the Trigicon day, the night sights,
does it cost you anything in terms of things that you have to remove from the weapon because you're going to make it ambidextrous?
No, you just switch it around.
Hmm. Well, why do you think it would take so long to make an ambidextrous pistol? Because that's been a complaint of left-handed shots forever. It's like, hey man, I'm not right-handed. Why can't you help me out?
Yeah, it's always been because you look at the population, it was,
too small.
How many people are shooting guns with left-handed? You know, if it's 15%, is it really worth, to actually change the design for 15% of the population? Because of that 15% of the population, 5% are really complaining. The other 10 have adapted to shooting a gun with the right hand.
Got it. Another question. Matt, forgive me for sounding stupid because it sounds like you've already addressed this, but I've never heard the gunner talk about female-friendly ammunition. Mike, you want to? Mike went through this when we asked one day. We were talking about he teaches a course to women on weapons handling and confidence and all the different things that Mike talks about. And he talked about a component of, you know, of being confident is, you know, is not being overpowered by the weapon. So Mike, you want to walk people down the road in terms of feel for a woman, feel the weapon, ammunition, all the rest of that?
It's just reduced load ammunition, subsonic ammunition. So if you're firing a nine millimeter, what you're looking for is, you know, what they cook, 147 grain subsonic ammunition. Or in revolvers, it's, you know, reduced load, wad cutters, you know, things like that. You don't want, what they consider like a plus, anything plus, in a P, because then it's a higher load. It's a higher load. It's going to give you more feet per second, more muzzle velocity, but you're going to get more recoil. So when you're teaching women and initially to shoot 9mm or anything, always be looking for reduced load ammunition. So something that's, that ammunition is not as powerful. And that's the teaching thing. So right. Eventually you're going to graduate past that, but you want them to get comfortable with handling and shooting a gun and working on, you know, follow through and trigger manipulation and grip and stance. And the easiest way to do that is don't give them something that's going to, you know, knock them back on their leg, you know, on their butt. You want to give them something that they can actually manage and control a little bit easier. So that's why we always say look for ammunition that's reduced load. And the easiest way, like you said, 9mm, is look for subsonic ammunition, 147 grain. Usually it comes in, everything at 147 grain is usually subsonic.
You know, and that same, I remember learning how to shoot the .45, and one of the big problems was, what do you call, anticipation, Mike? When guys are shoving the pistol away and you're seeing the strike of the round move downward and to the left. That's the anticipation. Well, is that the anticipation of recoil? That's what I remember.
Yeah, you're pushing the gun down. Right. You're anticipating recoil, so you push away from it. Easiest way to get through that is, like we've said before in the show, is buy snap caps, which are basically dummy ammo that have a spring-loaded primer. And when you load your magazine, have someone load it, or just put snap caps, you know, take 10 rounds of ammunition, put 5 snap caps in the same little group, and don't look while you're loading, you know, because it's actually pretty easy to not actually have to look at it, but, and then just grab them, and so somewhere in there, you got 5 dummy rounds, and you can catch yourself with that anticipation, so you load it, and you're shooting, and then when that fires on that snap cap, you can see yourself kind of go forward or do that act that you don't want to actually do when you're shooting, and you can catch yourself doing that, and you get kind of a better shooter. Just if you're instructing, you always want to put mix and dummy ammo in with a lot of ammo, so you can catch that with a shooter and then work on that.
And that would apply to any novice shooter, if they were
anybody.
Yeah, any novice.
I still
shooter.
Do it.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And even to I would say even the reduced load ammunition in terms of getting them comfortable with it. If you're teaching teens how to shoot, you know, I learned on a .45 as a powerful weapon, and so you're trying to teach things, and I'm trying to keep the son of a bitch from flying out of my hand.
You know, because it's, If you're into guns and you want your wife or your girlfriend or something like that, your daughter, even a young boy, it's best to start them out with something like a handgun with like the Sig Sauer 22 Mosquito. You know, from the look of it, when you look at the gun, it looks like a 9mm or a 380. It looks like a full-size semi-automatic. It weighs the same, but it fires 22 and it operates as the, you know, it has all the devices on it. It's going to be, you're going to find on a semi-automatic, and it's cheaper to shoot. It's a lot cheaper to shoot 22 than anything, but you can really learn a lot of good habits initially by shooting a smaller caliber round, especially like 22. Or in case of a Glock, you can buy the Glock slide, the 22 conversion kit, and then switch out the slide and then shoot 22 ammunition out of a Glock. So, you know, and that's why I tell people, if you're going to buy a gun, look at what it's capable, you know, the full capabilities of it. And that's why, again, I like Glock, because it has one of the largest aftermarket upgrades you can do. You can do a lot of things to Glock afterwards. It has a lot of components. It has a lot of, if you're into the color schemes and the blinging out guns, it's very capable in that aspect. There's a lot of aftermarket companies that build parts for Glocks, customize it to your specifications. But it also comes with, again, the capability of firing 22 or, you know, do whatever you want to do. So a whole different gamut of enjoyment when it comes to shooting.
Another question. Mac, does Gunner recommend Glock as a good teaching weapon?
Yeah, I do. And it's just because I'm really comfortable with it. Because it's not reliant on a mechanical safety. It's really reliant on the fact that you got to keep your finger out of the trigger, you know, index that finger, and you got to stress that a lot when you shoot her. So you're doing single shot drills, you know, so take a shot, boom, fire, get your finger out of the trigger, index that finger. Okay. Get your finger back on the trigger, pull the round, boom. A lot of people don't like Glocks because they're not sexy. You know, as they say in the shooting world, the Glock is the Honda Civic of the shooting world, because like the Honda Civic, it's reliable. It's good. You can drive a Honda Civic with 1,000,000 miles.
Forever.
It's not sexy. It's not cool, but it's going to get you to your destination. It's reliable. It's always going to start, you know. So, you know, again, a lot of people don't like the Glock because it's you know, aesthetics. It's not appeasing to the eye. It's not a sexy looking gun. But to me, it doesn't matter. I don't care. I just want a gun, when I pull it out, it's going to work.
Well, the aftermarket thing is pretty cool. I mean,
aftermarket is ridiculous.
Yeah, you find people that buy all kinds of products simply because of the aftermarket stuff.
The aftermarket is huge for a Glock. Huge. I mean, there's a couple companies that deal with just nothing but Glock aftermarket components.
Oh, man.
And you can really bling it or go.
Here's an interesting question. Mac, what is the number one pistol sold either in the United States or around the world? I would imagine if it's number one in the United States, it's number one in the world. What is the most popular pistol sold? Mike, you have any idea?
I have no idea. What is it?
Let me look up another email. Mac, you fell off your bike? Nice. Yeah, man. Yeah, and my phone survived. I kind of spiderwebbed the lower right-hand corner of it, which means the next time I drop it, it's going to crush the whole screen. But my phone survived. But, yeah, I went flying. And you know what? Mike's done it. You're screwed because your feet are clipped in. You're going nowhere like that. And I bounced off the fence twice trying to save it, so I fought it. But at the end, you know, you go ass over tea kettle, and with your feet clipped in, so you can't get anything down but your hand. And luckily, I have my gloves on, so I didn't jack my hand up. I got pretty good burns on the side of my right shin and the my right elbow, pretty good. But other than that, only my pride was wounded. But. Yeah, those nice. You used to get them in baseball. They're called strawberries, right, on your hip and whatnot. But
right,
yeah. Worst ball you've ever taken, and the fastest you've ever gone on your bike.
Oh man, I've never crashed on my bike.
Ever?
No, I mean, I had a car hit me, but she was.
What do you call, well, no, it was what do you call
that? It wasn't. I mean, I saw it coming. So I mean, she pulled alongside me. I'm in the bike lane. She she was right alongside me, and then she did a right turn right in front of me into a parking lot. And I broke just in time, and I hit the side of her car with, you know, the side of my body, because I turned the bike right away.
Oh.
You know, and the young girl's like, you know, you just hit me. And I'm like, no. No, they're a dumbass. You know, she's like, yeah, you did. You hit me in your bike. And I said, no, you just hit me. You want to call the police and have this one figured out?
What'd she say?
And, you know, and I explained to her that, you know, bikes, you know, in the bike lane on a road are just like any other, you know, vehicle. And you have to, I had to, you know, I'm going straight. She had to wait for me to actually turn or get out of the way. And she argued with me. San Clemente police showed up. Orange County Sheriff showed up and explained to the young woman that, yes, that she was held liable, and asked me if I wanted, you know, to make a report. And I told her no, because there was nothing, no damage or anything. But she got an education.
Wow. What's the fastest you've ever gone on your bike? The fastest I've ever gone on my bike was in Quantico. I want to say I was going 52 miles an hour down a hill. It was a hill. It was a hill from, there's a long, I don't know, it's a long and a pretty decent grade, but it starts kind of in, if familiar with Quantico, going to the basic school. I can't remember what MCB3 or whatever that is, but, anyway, there's this, as you go towards the interstate, there's this long descent. It's got to be close to a mile. And
right.
I got going 52 miles an hour on that one day. I was like,
yeah, the fastest I was close to, I was over 60, and I was coming down off of Palomar Observatory, on that road on Palomar Mountain. And that was pretty scary because, you know, on a carbon fiber bike, it's aerodynamic. When the wind changes direction on you in those little canyons, it hit me from the side. It almost put me over at 60 miles an hour. And I was like, whoa.
And the only, I remember when I'm thinking, I'm watching the speedometer, and I go past 40, and I go past 50, and I think, if I hit like a rock or anything,
yeah,
I can smell my flesh like burning as it skids across the asphalt, and I'll probably get sighted by the MPs.
So the most popular guns, it's kind of what I thought, you know, Smith & Wesson M&P series, because, again, they're reminiscent of Glock design. They have the striker fire. The Glock 19, the Glock 29, your CZ 85 Combat. CZs are great guns. That's that Czechoslovakian. It's like a Browning high power. Great guns. Your Springfield 1911s and your Springfield Armory XDs, again, because it's based on a Glock design.
Hold on, I'll read you. The five best-selling handguns in America all have one thing in common. You can argue over which brand of handgun you like, but when it comes to features, there is little room for argument. Most shoppers are looking for a gun that is compact, lightweight, and accurate, and for good reason. People want to arm themselves with handguns that are easily concealable and can fill the role of personal defense weapon. Top sellers in the small, fourth place, Glock 43 and the Springfield G43 and the Springfield XDS. So they're tied for fourth. Third place, Sig Sauer P938. Second place is a tie between Glock G19 and Smith & Wesson M&P Shield.
Yeah.
There you, first place, Ruger LCP.
I would argue that, man. That is a crappy gun. And
isn't this the one Montana man bought his wife?
The Ruger LCP is a pain in the ass to actually maintain.
Is it? Why?
Take it apart, because it's how it's put together and how it's designed. Not a big fan of. Most of the women that start out in my class had Ruger LCPs.
Oh, really?
They now either fire. Yeah, now they either fire Glock 19s or the Sig Sauer P238, which is the 380.
Interesting.
But the Ruger LCP not a great gun.
Oh, this is just what they say about it. The LCP from Storm Ruger was everyone's either first or second choice for a new semi-automatic handgun, and rightly so, since its introduction in 2008, the 38 ACP pistol has been wildly popular, though its sights and trigger pull are routinely panned. While there are always improvements that could be made, Ruger seems to have addressed virtually all of them with the LCP-2. Interesting.
Yeah, so the LC, if you're going to buy a 380, the LC, of course, now it's price point. You're looking at a $220 gun, right?
Right.
380. Or you buy a better 380, and it's the Sig Sauer P238 at $550. You know, but I will tell you, without a doubt, the Ruger in the 380 market, like this we're talking about, the LCP, the Ruger 238, the slide is so much easier. I mean, a child can pull that thing back. It's easier to actually take apart. You know, and it's just overall a better gun.
Okay.
The LCP.
Okay, let me ask a question. You said a child can pull the slide. Are you being facetious about that? Because that's an element.
Yeah, I'm being facetious.
Okay. A child, you know, can't actually pull it back.
It's just very easy to pull. It's very easy to pull back.
Got it. Okay. All right. Interesting. Gunner got a new gun.
Yeah, got the 19X.
All right, what else is on? Let's see. The Associated Press is reporting Senate votes to advance bill financing government as Democrats relent, signaling an end to federal shutdown is near. The funding would go through February 8th. Again, I said last week, I'll just say it again. This kind of bullshit is, you wonder why Donald Trump got elected. People are sick of it. Can't pass a budget. Can't agree on basics of immigration. All right, build a barrier, improve that. It's a joke. I got statistics of what does a wall do. Oh my God, I didn't even know.
Yeah,
it stops 90% in places like Tijuana, El Paso, places like Yuma. It's a joke.
Today is a joke.
Tucson. Yeah, it's not, you know, it's the barrier that we need, you know, whatever we need, wherever we need it, improve that so we don't have to do this again and then deal with the dreamers. You know, and everybody's good with that, but we have to play stupid games. So if you want to know why Donald Trump got elected, for all of you people that hate it, that dysfunction is what got him elected. And it's not like they're going to make peace and all of a sudden do good things. They're not. They're faking it right now, and so it goes. But I'll tell you what, it doesn't even bother me, because it is what it is, and if you think it's any other way, then you're stupid. And
Rudy said the 9mm Beretta, and I just told him, seriously, Rudy, stop it.
Dude,
seriously.
Come on. Nobody liked that weapon.
Yeah.
That's a
Rudy, big, yeah.
Compared to the Glock and other things that you're looking at, right, that the military's looking at, that thing is like a big, clunky tank, man.
Right. So I just told Rudy, keep your comments to planes.
and fitness.
And what?
And fitness.
And soccer.
Yeah. Momentum. What's the name of his business? Momentum what?
Fitness.
Momentum Fitness? Hold on, I gotta get it right. Momentum, he's screaming at his phone right now. Momentum Fitness, San Marcos, California. Let's see if he's listed in Google yet. Momentum Training Centers.
Yeah.
That's what it is, Momentum Training Center. Check it out on Facebook, our boy Knowles. Getting everybody healthy, getting you guys rocked up, playing for the U.S. national team. If you want to do that, there's only one way. Momentum Training Center. Walk in, ask for Kurt Knowles. Say, yo, where's my boy Knowles? I want to see Rudy. If you call him Rudy, I'm sure there's a discount to be had in there. Okay? So check it out, San Marcos.
Yeah, tell them Gunner and Max sent you it, and maybe you'll get a discount.
Yeah, maybe you'll get the five-figure discount. And if he won't give you the discount, get indignant. So what about the All Marine Radio discount? What's up, bro? And if you get in his face, maybe he'll relent, but who knows. Anyway. All right, man, anything else on the agenda for today?
No. No, not at all.
Really? You're free and clear?
Well, yeah. Oh, I got to go see the doctor today.
Again?
Then,
good God, man.
Yeah, just check up. And then February 7th, I got my sleep study test.
Oh, man. So what are they going to do?
I'm going to spend the night in the hospital.
Oh, yeah. They're going to videotape you.
Oh, man. I better not. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
you better not.
She didn't think it was a very good joke when she said, you know, make sure you bring your sleepwear and a pillow, you know, da 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 da. And I said, what if I sleep in nothing? It was kind of like a pause. And I said, I'm just kidding.
I'll bring my jammies. What, so do you have sleep apnea?
That's what I said.
Do you have sleep apnea?
So I said, I don't know. No, she wants to test me. Because I can't sleep at night. So.
I know, but nobody does.
I know.
Like, if in our group, if somebody sends a text, like, at 3 in the morning, they'll get three answers. Yes, no, well, whatever. But everybody's awake all night. How many times did you wake up last night?
Twice.
Yeah, I woke up three times.
Yeah, but I didn't go to bed until, like, 12:30 at night, almost 1.
Yeah, I went to bed at 11:25. And Mike, is that a normal? Is that abnormal for you? A normal?
Actually, it was kind of early.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, mine is kind of late, and the reason that I didn't wake up four times or five times is because I went to bed later. I slept through the night, like Friday night, and I woke up and I was like, what just happened? And when I say slept through the night, it means I like woke up once or twice. But I don't know. So I don't have sleep apnea. I wake up.
No, I don't have sleep apnea. I just can't sleep.
And they prescribed drugs for me, but I tell them I don't want to take those drugs.
No.
I'd rather wake up. I'm okay with it. I've done it for this long. I'm okay. So when do you go do the sleep thing?
February 7th.
All right, man. Have a good day. Are you going to go shoot again?
All right, I'll talk to her. Yeah, we're shooting this week, I think.
Nice. Is the ex going to make the trip?
Oh, yeah.
The ex. What else are we shooting?
Just probably the ex.
Just the ex?
Yeah, that's my new go-to.
the new go-to. All right, man. Have a good one.
I'll talk to her.
There it is, the one and only Musselman. Electronic shifters? That's, yeah, not so much up on the bike event. My friends are giving me shit about not having hair on my legs. I sent them a picture of me in the theater, and I started getting ragged on about having no hair on my legs. I'm Irish, man. I'm not a hairy guy. What can I say? Are you trying to body shame me? 52 miles an hour, Mac. I'm calling BS on that. You can call BS on whatever you want there, fat boy. It's legit. Down that long, long decline in Quantico as you're coming from the basic school towards I-95. Yeah. 52 miles an hour. And I was trying to set a land speed record that day. So, you know, pedaling into it. Pedaling down into it. Come on, I was going 35 at the top of it. right? Gradual descent, coming into it, going fast, got it in about 10th gear, crushing it, right? And then you hit the down slope, and so you're at like 35, and then you break 40, and now you're like, oh my God. Yeah, no kidding. I mean, come on, 52? And I probably was braking at the time because I knew I was going to crash. I knew something wrong was going to happen. That pistol, that is, I knew I'd heard it before. That's what Mike Attack, Montana Man, bought that for his wife. Montana Man says the slide is the reason she likes it. Yeah. Our guy from Napa? Yeah, the guy with the small tires on the big truck? That guy? Yeah, the guy who wears Uggs? Yeah. You can see how Napa has affected him. Ugg wearing, little tires, big truck. He's that guy, right? 13% body fat. Got measured 2 weeks ago. The fatter my neck gets, the leaner I get. That's impossible. You can't tape leaner if your neck's getting fatter. Okay? It's impossible. Yeah. So you can see, Napa boy, he got issues, okay? Let go of the Uggs, okay? Yeah. And all that protesting? Yeah. Thou protestest too much. Hold on. One more email. Mac, what's the name of the training place? I live not too far from San Marcos. Momentum Training Center. That's right. Owner-operator, Kurt Knowles. Yeah, walk in there. Hey, Rudy. Just give me this. Hey, Rudy, what's up? And don't say anything else, because he'll think you're a bro, right? You're calling him Rudy? And he's got to give you 10% for just the bro hookup. Yeah, don't lead him on any other way. Don't like, hey, man, do I know you? And that's how Noel talks. Hey, man. Hey, devil dog. Yeah, that's how he talks. Yeah, he's so, check it out, though. You good? They're on Facebook. They're on the Internet. Momentum Training Center, San Marcos, California. You can see the place that he's tricked out. They do yoga. Yeah, they train elite athletes. There's a picture of Knowles there with his t-shirt on. Why don't I have a t-shirt? Shows the facility. Yeah, check it out. All right, awesome show today. Carl Marlanis, really interesting guy. We talked to him about racism in Vietnam and also about the feedback he's got from other veterans, and things, and his thoughts about the Ken Burns documentary, The Vietnam War. And I think he has the same experience we all have had. He's had people that he knows attack it, people he knows like it, people have issues with certain pieces of it. And he even said, hey, they screwed up, you know, something that they said about me. And he said, I wrote him a letter, and they wrote me back saying, okay, if anybody asks, we'll clarify it. Other than that, we're not going into post-production and editing it for you. Sorry. Sorry, Marlanis. We don't care if you went to Yale and you're a Rhodes Scholar. Shut it. So don't touch that dial. Also, 50 years ago, we're going to do some stuff about Quezon. We'll see if we can. I believe that... is my understanding that the book Quezon written by the prolific author of, God, what do you say, 53 books about the Marine Corps? That's a lot of it. And there's all kinds of books about Kason. Eric Hamill, though, has joined us on a number of occasions about his work in Beirut. He obviously wrote a book about Kason, and right, he's written about Guadalcanal, all kinds of stuff. You'll hear from Ken Rogers, as 50 years, that must be incredible, for those guys to think back and about 50 years ago, when we think about this. But I believe my point was, they're re-releasing, Eric Hamill's, book, Kason. I believe the publisher is re-releasing it, either this week or last week. So, we'll see if we can get him on. Anyway, have a great day. Carl Marlanis, very interesting today. The Gunner interesting today, too, talking about bikes and guns and things like that. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next. And again, if you work at Camp Pendleton or you're hanging out Southern California, the San Marcos area, check it out by all means. Momentum Training Center. Kurt Knowles is an awesome guy. He's got an awesome family, and he'll have an awesome business. And he's a good dude. So and a battle buddy. So they come All Marine Radio recommended. So, and if you got any complaints, let me know. I'll take it up with Knowles in short order. So have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow. And we have to listen to Secretary Mattis made a speech last week at Johns Hopkins. I wanna play that for you. It talks about it's the strategic review, and with his stamp on it, he doesn't do anything with smoke and mirrors, boilerplate it, blah blah blah. And you need to hear that speech. We might hear that tomorrow. I want you to hear the full audio of that attack that they did at Kason. The rest of it is awesome. So it's motivating. As that guy talks about going down the trench line, and as I said, he's living it. When you watch the video, you're watching him, and it's crazy to watch him as he relives it. Anyway, have a great day on a Monday. All Marine Radio over and out.